Hello and welcome to the Ice Guys. This is the show that takes you into the world of the National Hockey League. Every game, every day, from a betting perspective. With pro sports handicappers, Ian Cameron, Alex P. Smith, and various guests from the world of hockey and sports betting. And now, here's your host, Ian Cameron.
Welcome to the Ice Guys, Wednesday, April the 10th, presented by Boston Hemp Inc., Ian Cameron, Alex B. Smith, and we have a special guest joining us today, former NHLer, current pro hockey player, Brendan Perlini, on the show with us today. I want to mention something, though, as we're starting. StreamYard is letting us know that apparently streaming to YouTube Live is having issues right now. It's a system issue. So that is why, if you're having issues watching this stream, you can't make this shit up that this happens as we have a day with a guest on, but here we are. So if you're watching the show right now or trying to watch the show, make sure you get to Twitter X. The show is streaming there on our my Twitter account, Bobano Bets, the Ice Guys Twitter account. You'll see the show streaming there right now. I'm seeing the check mark. It's on my the Facebook page as well. So make sure you check that out. But apparently right now we have issues with the show streaming to YouTube. And this is a StreamYard issue. It's a system-wide issue. So there's nothing we can do about it to fix it. We just want to let you know all about that right now. So that's the way it is. And just the timing is beyond shitty, you know, for this to be happening right now. But nevertheless, the show must go on. Brendan Perlini with us. Brendan, thanks for joining us. Good to have you on the show. What's up?
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
No doubt. So we'll start with the hockey stuff. You getting into hockey, of course, junior. You end up drafted first round pick of the Arizona Coyotes, a few years there. But just talk about how it started for you getting into hockey.
Yeah, I mean, like our family is pretty well versed in hockey. My grandfather was a player, my dad, my brother, you know, all my uncles. So even on my mom's side too, my mom never, I guess back then they didn't have women's hockey, but her brother was a professional player as well. So yeah, man, it runs in the blood and runs in the family. And I think we were kind of, both me and my brother, born into this. And yeah, it's, you know, we're big golfers and stuff too. So, you know, sometimes I look back and I'm like, shit, I, you know, wish I would have played golf being in the sunshine year round, but you know, it's nevertheless, yeah, man, it's an awesome game. It runs so deep in our family, like I said. And, yeah, it's pretty cool, really.
No doubt. How was your time in Arizona? Most of your NHL tenure was with them, the Arizona Coyotes. But talk about those few years there in the desert with the Coyotes. Now, the Coyotes had that little run, you know, late 2000s. They had Dave Tippett there. They had, Mike Smith as their goalie. Had some pretty good teams. You were in that mix where they were starting to slide down a little bit. But talk about the time with Arizona.
Yeah, it's I mean, Arizona is an awesome place. It's sort of – it's interesting, dude, to see these days, I guess, what's going on out there. So I still go back in the summertime. This might be the first summer that I don't. But I usually get back. I've been doing it for the last 6, 7, 8 years going out there and training. There's great guys out there training with Austin Matthews, Thompson, Tage Thompson's out there. Like, there's a bunch of guys who have places. So it's an awesome setup. A little bit unfortunate, I guess, as far as these days, like with the arena and things like that. And, you know, we didn't really have to, when I was there, we didn't really have to go through much of that, but there was a lot of turnover in players and staff and management, ownership, dude. I think in the 3-4 years I was there, it was like, it was one guy who owned it, then it was 12 guys, then 5 guys bought out 12 guys, and it, you know, so it was a lot. But dude, if they could ever, you know, I say this with a ton of respect for them, if they could seriously get an arena and just set shit up proper, it would be top 3-4
and serious ownership is what's needed too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, I guess I can't speak on the guys who are there these days because I don't know them personally or never really, you know, been involved with them. But yeah, just I remember when Vegas came into the league. I think that was my second year, and they came in, and obviously, okay, it is Vegas, but at the same time, like the production of everything, the arena, like we were coming in, we're like, man, this is, these guys are in our division. They just like,
it's right there on the strip. The location of the arena was a winner from the beginning where they put
almost made us, just from the production of the thing, it made us look like terrible compared to that, you know, like of just, I don't know, in-game stuff, like just seem really sharp and with it. You know, all this little stuff matters, right? Like, as much as you can say, like, oh, well, if the team is winning and if the players are good and, you know, the people will come, yeah, all right. But the same sense, too, I think there needs to be, like, an effort into that side, right? And, you know, putting on
a balance.
Yeah. So, but like I said, if they could, you know, if they got something dialed in, you would see a ton of free agents go there because it's an awesome place to live.
And we know that firsthand. I mean, how many people have been dealing with Arizona in and out with Jason Demers, friend of the show, Eddie Lack, friend of the show. Yeah. They're big-time proponents of Arizona and living there and playing hockey there and all that. And it's an interesting time to have you on with your time with Arizona, because the reports come out today that now they've made schedules, the NHL, and contingency plans for next year, a schedule for the Coyotes and a schedule for a team in Salt Lake City, Utah, should they decide to relocate the team to Salt Lake City in Utah next season. That is on the table apparently right now, according to the NHL. So all of a sudden, we're looking at at least the possibility, not saying it will happen for sure, but there is now a possibility and a set plan on the table that if this falls through and the NHL says that's enough, we're trying to get this building deal done and we're not getting it done, then this could happen, that next year the Coyotes are playing in Utah.
Wow, yeah, it's, you know, I'm just going to say it's really, like, it's too bad to hear that because I know how good it is out there. I know the people. And it is because of Matthews these days too. Like, there's so many kids who are coming out of there. The Nice with the Leafs there as well. Yep. Like, there's a lot of good kids. And it's kind of like hockey is booming there, really. And, you know, to take that away from all these kids and stuff would suck. But at the same time, you know, obviously the business side of things and stuff, I get it. And I mean, it's super interesting. Even Utah, like, I actually spent a little bit of time out there, and I never, I guess, spent like a whole lot like downtown Salt Lake, or I don't really know where they would put it, but sort of an interesting, like, if I was to compare the two, I would be picking Scottsdale all day over Utah, you know. But
well, I think Barkley ripped Utah once for lack of things to do. I think I heard that on an NBA broadcast once, but it is what it is. I'll tell you what, though. They do have minor pro hockey there, and they have had minor pro hockey there, Utah, in the past. So, and they got a building. They've got a state-of-the-art building ready to host that hockey team. So that's the appeal right now with the NHL. They want something in that market. The building's there. The arena looks phenomenal, and they want to put something there.
Here's the difference. Like you said, there's been minor league hockey in Utah, in the Salt Lake City area, for over three decades now at this point. And when you go back and look at the old Utah Grizzlies, when they were in the International Hockey League, they weren't winning championships. They were filling up the same building as the Utah Jazz with 13,000 to 15,000 people on a weekend night. You've never had that kind of consistency outside of the first few years in Phoenix at America West Arena, because that was a brand new franchise. But ever since then, there's been just dwindling and varying levels of attendance with the Arizona franchise, whatever arena that they're in. The league is taking a loss by having the team playing in a 5,000-seat arena. Even if you put them temporarily in somewhere where they can hold 13 to 15,000, now you're talking about everything as far as especially with the whole escrow issue still trying to be cleared up from the end of the pandemic. That's important. Those are the big things that everybody's looking at from the business perspective. It's a no-brainer. You take them out of Arizona. Now, I get that there's still a fan base there. We've seen the growing culture of hockey there. And what I don't understand is, and I've been saying this, especially when people talk about bringing hockey back to Atlanta for a third time, every city doesn't have to be an NHL city. Mm-hmm. Some cities can handle two hockey teams, like Chicago or New York. And there's some cities who can't handle one hockey team at the highest of pro levels. That's not a knock on the city. That's not a knock on the hockey in that city. But you can have a quality AHL franchise in Phoenix or in the Phoenix metro area that would draw. You could have a quality AHL franchise in Atlanta that would draw well. And it's still high-level hockey. And it's the prices, you're not demanding a high price for tickets, high prices for concessions. So it makes things easier and more palatable for those cities, for the residents and the fans in those cities. So I think that's really the biggest thing. Everybody wants to jump, oh, let's get an NHL franchise. There was a reason why there were four professional leagues in the 90s and 2000s around this country, because some cities had a demand for hockey, good level, high level hockey, but it.
I totally agree, man. I was just going to say too, like, I played my first season with Shane Doan, and Doaner retired after that. And I caught up with him this summer because he left the Yotes and went obviously to Toronto. And just talking with him, man, is like, you know, asking him behind the scenes, I guess, of what's going on, like with the arena and things like that. Like, there's, I don't know, he said it kind of just always felt like he was fighting an uphill battle with people, where he didn't really know if, like, you know, whether it's politicians or the, like, I seen, did some, the mayor of Scottsdale or something come out and say something?
Mayor of Scottsdale said, don't bring any of that here.
Yeah, and he sort of said that. He told me that, where, you know, I'm fighting an uphill battle with these sort of things, and, you know, every room he was going into, it was that sort of negative attitude towards it. And eventually, you know, you can only hear that so much before you sort of get tired of it. So, it's interesting, man. You know, we'll see, I guess, what happens. But, like, going forward, it, you know, I even think about this, too, because I often get asked, like, man, like, especially in Canada, why don't they bring a franchise back to Quebec or something like that? I got told...
they've had a building there for years and years that's ready.
Yep. So I got told, I forget who told me this in the league. It wasn't a player. It was somebody, we do all these like NHL PA meetings with different PA reps. And one of the guys had mentioned to me that I asked that question, and they said, well, why go back to Quebec when we can go to Vegas or Seattle, an untapped market where there's all this kind of new money, per se, that can come in? He's like, look, we know, you know, Montreal and these things, we know they're going to sell out anyway, and people in Quebec are going to buy Leafs gear, they're going to buy Montreal gear, they're going to, like, they're already invested in hockey and stuff. So they said, by bringing a team back there, we're really not making, like, much more money. But they said, by getting a Seattle or a Vegas or – like, new areas that bring new sponsorship and new money. And I understood it a lot more after hearing that. I mean, it, in a way, you're sort of like, okay, well, you know, ticket sales and stuff like that, if they're still selling out. But I guess it's spreading the kind of knowledge and wealth in a way, instead of, you know, hockey's always going to be big in Canada. You can put an NHL team in Saskatchewan, right? And it's going to sell out. And it's going to, so...
That's except if you're Winnipeg, where they're struggling to hit 12,000 people at one point this year. That was stunning to me. I couldn't believe that.
Well, and that's the crazy part too, right, is that these should be cautionary tales. Arizona and Winnipeg both should be cautionary tales to any city, be it Salt Lake City, Houston, Quebec City again, Atlanta again. If you get a team, you guys better show up and continue to show up, because they will pull the team. There is no loyalty unless you're an original six franchise or you're a super successful franchise. Anything can be moved. We learned that from the 90s. No one could have ever thought in the 80s, in the 70s, that Quebec City would not have a team and that Denver would have a team. I'm sure there's a whole lot of people who dropped dead and fainted when they found that Winnipeg was getting moved to Phoenix, Arizona in 1996, when the Hartford Whalers were getting moved to Carolina. So we've learned that, okay, 20, 25 years in the league, that doesn't mean shit. They will move you if you aren't making money and if you aren't going to games consistently. So that's the other cautionary tale we have to learn.
Why the fuck is NFL going on Peacock and Amazon Prime and all this bullshit?
Playing games in Europe and Brazil because it's money.
Yeah. Exactly. It's money. It's to make fucking money.
Money talks and bullshit walks in every industry.
Yeah. You're sort of almost pigeonholed don't you guys think a little bit in hockey, where, like, what other states in the U.S., like, where would you guys go? Like, some of these states in the South here don't even know what the hell hockey is. You know, you can't beat out a college football. You can't beat out a college basketball. So,
you know, down there in Charlotte where you're playing right now, Brendan, you know that Checkers and even the Hurricanes in the NHL level, they're not going to beat out college football. They're not going to beat out college basketball and the fandom department and the eyeballs and the support. That's just not going to happen.
And that's why. And I've been a proponent of this for a long time, and I've said this even, of course, with the dissolvement of the IHL, but even with how the AHL shifted everything to where they became just a true feeder league for the NHL, there needs to be some kind of separate hockey league in North America that gives high level pro hockey, but it is I wouldn't even say watered down, but it's tailored to building fan bases. The NHL is not worried about, you know, like I said, yeah, they want new money if we go bring in a new franchise. But the NHL product is not conducive toward building the game, in my opinion. This is expert level shit. If you're a hockey fan, you watch the NHL. But if you're trying to learn and grow with the game, there needs to be somewhere in between. It can't be minor league because at the end of the day, that's a whole different system. And when you root for your minor league team and you realize half your guys are gone because the big club needs those players, that's going to hurt fan bases. It has for years. That's why you see minor league teams move around. But to have something in between in these cities that aren't, you know, stocked enough to hold the 15,000, 18,000 a night and be a top-level NHL team, but they can provide more than just being the feeder team and having 4,000 or 5,000 people. There has to be that in between. And we have enough cities between the U.S. and Canada to hold the league. We have enough talent, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm going to use the quotation talent because you got the mid-level quad A guys better than any, you know, AHL talent, but not good enough to really crack and be steady in the NHL every night. We have that kind of talent. We know we have the pipeline from Europe, so you get more and more guys coming over from Europe having a league like this. There's a feasible market here for another league that wouldn't compete and try to go up against the NHL, wouldn't go up against the NHL, it'd just be its own separate entity, and it would help people learn about the game of hockey, especially in these southern and western states where the game doesn't have as rich of a history.
And support guys like our guest here, Brendan. Look at over 100 games in the NHL. There's good players in the American Hockey League playing there right now. 100%.
Quality players.
You're saying like a live golf for
right.
– Hockey,
right? right. But they stay in their own lanes. Support each other even. Have preseason games.
Would you like to see the game like different? Would you like to see it done the same or different rules in that?
I would like to see it the same, but let that be it. Let that be the experimental rules. Let's figure out how to fix the NHL's overtime issue, and let's use this league to do that. Let's experiment with a team carrying three goalies. Let's experiment with the roster rules and different things, timeouts, reviews. Let's use that. It can be experimental as well. And sorry, my camera's acting up. It can be experimental as well, but there's room for all of this. And like I said, they would still have quality hockey. It would still be at a high level, and it would, if anything, help the NHL with certain things, like figuring out rules and different changes and stuff. Maybe the NHL can go, hey, the NHL did it with the IHL. There's a whole lot of things they stole from the IHL, number one being the shootout. So they could easily go and say, oh, yeah, we like that idea. Let's modify that for our game.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great discussion. Help each other out. Yeah, that's what we're trying to say.
It's all about growing the game. It's all about growing the game everywhere, right? That's right. At the end of the day, the AHL, the NHL, every league, we all want to grow this game, this great game of hockey together.
That's right.
But the NHL has its own other issues, and they don't need to be focused on, just like all of this, the animated stuff we're seeing and these different things that they're doing to reach out to the younger people. Let's have another league for that.
Yeah.
You know, we can start doing all those kind of things in a separate league, and that'll, like I said, drum up an interest, and then people will go, because you're still going to watch the NHL. If you love the game, just like me, I learned the game watching the game from the IHL. But I still watch the NHL. I still love the NHL because that's the best hockey.
Right.
At the end of the day, you're still going to find the best hockey. Once you love hockey, then you're going to find the best hockey. And then that's when you go to watch the NHL.
The Vegas, Colorado on TNT, they did that little draft with the Bugs Bunny and all that over the weekend. Like, they're trying to reach out to the youth. But come on, you got to have more ways to do it than just that.
You don't grow up just ordering burgers from the steakhouse. You eat McDonald's and you eat White Castle and you eat Burger King. And then eventually you grow up and go, oh, wow, I went to the steakhouse one day and tried this fantastic hamburger. No different.
Yeah, that's
right.
I like that.
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. No doubt. No, it's a great discussion. I knew we'd get into it, the discussion, because your connection playing with the Coyotes, you were there, You had boots on the ground. You saw it firsthand what it was like there. And obviously the big news today that there's consideration that they might be in Utah playing next season. So we definitely wanted to talk about that. But now the part I know Alex is excited about, Chicago Blackhawks, your time there. Yes. It was, what, a season and a bit. Now, yep. You entered there after that wave of just, you know, championships there, mm-hmm. but you still got to be right there up close and personal and play with the likes of Jonathan Toews and especially Sir Patrick Kane. What kind of great experience was that for you?
Oh, man, yeah, it was awesome. I would say that, like, I probably look back on my time in Chicago as, like, the best in the NHL. Like, it's how do I describe this? It's hard to, I guess, for an original six team, like, you know, everything is just, it's done, it was done right at, you know, from the food, from the way we traveled, like, it was as NHL as you could get. And you understood, like, coming over from Arizona, you understood, like, that, like, ah, okay, I see why these guys have won three times in the last 10 years or whatever it was at that time. And, yeah, like we, that year too, we had, obviously we had Taser, Kane, still had, Crawford, Seabrook, Dunks. We had Chris Kunitz, like so many guys with cups. Right. And so just going to dinner with these guys and like, it was awesome, man. Just hearing all the stories and what, like the culture was so cool of those older guys and, they didn't even really need to say too much to you just to get you to rally around. And everything was always about, like, the team, the group. And, like, I played on different teams that were really clicky and, you know, like, even just going out for dinner. Some guys eat with some guys. Younger guys eat with younger guys. Older veterans are only with each other. And it's weird, man. Those usually aren't good teams. And in Chicago, it was, like, polar opposite. You know, we had – those legends taking the young guys and vice versa and whatnot. And it was just, I know that kind of sounds funny, but it was, they really understand, like, especially Taser, being the captain there for as long as he was, like, just understands they need everyone, you know? And it's not whether, you know, whether I'm doing anything at that time or not. And actually to, tell you guys, I have a little plug here, but, I have a YouTube thing coming out, like my own YouTube channel under my name, Brandon.
Oh, Blaney. Very good.
Oh, good.
And I actually talk about a lot of this stuff. And first video that's going to be coming out after the season here sometime in May or whenever we finish is actually players I played with and, like, behind-the-scenes stories of guys I really liked, guys I didn't like. And this is all kind of involved in that too. So, yeah, man, there's really, you know, it was such a good time, such a good place. Like, my girlfriend's from there, so I get to go back there in the summertime a little bit and hopefully spend some more time there this summer. But, yeah, I love all those guys. Like, all those legends are just the best guys. Like, you don't win like that unless you're a good human, you know. And for what everything that happened there over the last – however many years there, the whole Kyle Beach thing and all that, right. You know, that's too bad and that's unfortunate. And that's the dark side, I guess, of sports too, because there's, you know, regardless of what team you're on, like, there's usually something going on with someone and maybe not to that extent, but, you know, talk about mental health, talk about, you know, there's a lot of different things that,
right.
You know,
I'm sure there's shit that's gone down, just horrendous stuff that it's not, we don't even know about because it hasn't been uncovered yet.
But, yeah, exactly. And half the time, you know, the players don't even know too. Yep. Right. Like, I've gone through stuff myself where, you know, I'm like, I'm not telling guys on the team. Or like, a lot of times you don't, like, they're your brothers and your teammates, but, like, for me personally, I don't feel like I want to put that weight on someone else or right. So you kind of almost end up bearing it yourself, you know, when in reality, maybe that's not the right thing to do. And maybe by telling someone can help you. But, there's, you know, but I guess long story short, Chicago was so great, man. And, a lot of fun times there, a great city. And, really epitomizes the NHL plan there for sure.
No, I'm looking at the roster of your 2018-2019 season there, which was the main season you played there, 46 games you played with the Blackhawks that year for them. And I'm seeing, yeah, Kane, Taves, DeBrincat was there, Dylan Strome, Brandon Saad, Duncan Keith.
Yeah, Saad.
There's one single solitary Chicago Blackhawk from that team that you played with that's still there right now, and that's Connor Murphy.
I was going to say, Murphy. Murph was I played with him twice too, once in Arizona and once in Chicago. Great guy. Really good human.
Yeah, no doubt. Seeing the skill level of Kane, you know, too, on a nightly basis. I mean, we see you now with Detroit as they try to battle for the playoffs. And Alex is on record, and it's hard to debate it. Best Blackhawk of all time, best U.S. player of all time. I don't think that's a debate based on the career he's had. I don't think it can be.
Yeah, it's seeing that up close and personal. I mean, you know, I guess if you want my honest opinion, who has impressed me the most? I got pretty darn fortunate playing on some teams with some good players, but like McDavid just blows everyone. It's like not even close. Like
that's right. You were with Edmonton after that.
He's sorry, up there. Sorry to skip forward.
No, that's all right.
But I guess to just give a little bit of a story, like this guy. We were sort of like, I guess my family raised, like we've been around hockey our whole life. We've been around NHL guys, you know, there were a lot in my hometown. And call it, you know, being used to good players. I don't really know what you want to call it, but we weren't one that was like myself and my brother and my family that were like easily impressed of like, you know, like, okay, yeah, he's a good player. And, but it wasn't like, oh my God, you know, like falling all over the guy. Right. And, the only,
like I say with these people that, you know, sometimes I've interviewed someone and I get excited for it. I'm like, hold on, just another human being, you know?
Yeah. And
think of it that
way. I will say the only guy that I felt like that and not, you know, just to the extent of his hockey was McDavid, because it was like, I think as a player, you know certain things that you can do, and like skill level of like seeing that, like let's call it the Michigan there, right? Like you see guys do that and stuff, and that Svechnikov, he does it the other night. It's doable. Like enough guys are doing it now. You see enough young kids, like they come in. It's not something you really look at and are like, oh my God, I could never do that.
No, we've seen it enough now where it's like just it's standard now. It's like run of the mill now, the Michigan move.
The little shit that McDavid would do is like, man, he would go into turns and like come out of the turn faster than he went into it. And it was just like little stuff that, you know, I don't even know if you guys would be able to appreciate, but as the player.
Because if you have to stop on a dime, usually your speed decreases. You decelerate, not accelerate.
Like the separation he could create from you, like from turning, was like usually, you know, if you turn, yeah, you're kind of right with the guy. But it was just he had me once a game on the bench being like, how the fuck did he just do that? Like, and I don't know if you can swear on the show or not. But,
of course we can.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
of course we can. Absolutely. Yeah, anything goes.
It was really unbelievable the shit that he could do. And to where even, you know, not to take anything away from Kane or any of those other guys, like they all do their individual things like really, really good. But he was the most impressive to me, where it was just like, to do it at that speed, to have your hands go through that, and to like, it's not even like he's like, oh my God, he's dangling that guy, but he just like knifes through guys, like, you know, a hot knife through butter.
Yep.
The way he can just split right through, and I'm like, how didn't that guy just hit him? Like he manages to dart right through and score, and doing it at that speed is tough.
His ability to go from 0 miles an hour, because when he's at a stop, and just go to 100 miles an hour speed wise is just unbelievable. Yeah. Connor McDavid. And I'm sure seeing that, you know, when you were with the Oilers, you know, up close and personal, you realize that. And him and McKinnon with the horse gallop, the old horse gallop that he has, Nathan McKinnon with his skating stride. That's one of those two, just in their skating ability, it's so fucking fun to watch. I mean, McDavid just go from 0 to 100 top speed, and then MacKinnon with that horse gallop skating stride that he has. Man, did he show that off last night in the hat trick against Minnesota. So those are two players in the league. They're not only two of the best players in the world right now, but watching them skate, it's fun to watch.
Yeah. The other guy too, like when I first came into the league, I think my first year, that was Pittsburgh's second cup on the back-to-back. It was 15-16, 16-17. And, when we played against Pittsburgh in there and then at home, Sid was just like he had the puck. I've never seen this before. He had the puck the whole game, like just him. And that is the only other time that I've been, like, really blown away by him. Like, holy cow, like. And, you know, you like to say the puck just follows him, but he's smart enough to go to the right areas to always get it. And I was, like, so, so impressed. Like, it really blew me away, to be honest. So, all those guys in Chicago, nonetheless, they're all legends in their own right, you know. And I caught them, most of them, on the back half of the career. You'd almost like to see, like – like I'm close with
man. Them. If I had just gotten there like 3-4 years earlier, you're thinking,
You know, you'd like to see what a prime Duncan Keith and a prime Brent Seabrook and those type of guys, and you know, they were just in the last couple of years of their career. But you know,
did you see? By the way, I got to tell you,
Brendan, experts.
Yeah, no doubt. But I got to tell you, Brendan, about Alex's vitriol about Chelios getting the jersey retired.
Oh yeah,
Same number that Brent Seabrook wore. And Alex has been vehement from day one that as great a player as Chelios was in his day with the Blackhawks, 91 to 99, he was there.
Right.
Brent Seabrook, he's got to, at the very least down the road, share that number 7 up in the rafters with Chelios, because he won the cups there. He was a phenomenal top elite defenseman in the league for most of his run there in Chicago before the injuries really debilitated him later in his career. Fully on board with what Alex is saying there. To me, Brent Seabrook is the longer lasting impact on the Chicago Blackhawks franchise compared to fucking Chris Chelios. To me, that absolutely is. It's easy. Yeah.
And Brendan, you can co-sign on this because you played with him with that season. Right at the end when he started getting hurt, when he basically said that he wasn't able to even lift up his kids when he come home because he was in so much pain, where he basically had to have both shoulders and eventually both hips redone. And was playing throughout that time, those last 2.5 seasons, still playing high level minutes, top level minutes. Nobody's doing that these days. And that alone, to end his career on that, on top of all he did beforehand, leading them to the 3 championships. Like I said, it's an absolute no brainer. It should have never even been shared, in my opinion. It's Brent Seabrook. He's the best number 7 in Hawks.
Yeah, it's funny because I actually, our family, we know Chelly like pretty well. My brother played with his kids at Michigan State, and I seen him a lot around Chicago. So, if I ran into Chelly, you know, we'd have a good conversation and whatnot. But I actually associate him, you know, I'm still in my 20s, but I associate him more with the Red Wings than I do with any other team. Congratulations to him on that, and wish him nothing but the best. I do think you're right in, you know, Siebes probably deserves, you know, some sort of thing like that.
And yep.
I also, I don't know. It's interesting too, because I think of this and, you know, my time with Detroit actually was, I thought about this there. Where do you draw the line of like 88's got to go in the rafters, 19's got to go in the rafters. There's two, like Dunks. Dunks is the Norris, won the, you know, it's like, two, then Corey Crawford won 2 cups. Do you put his? You know, there's so many guys. And when I was in Detroit, it was like, well, you can't, like, even though 91's not retired, you can't wear it because Fedorov wore that. You can't wear 9, 10, 7. They had half the damn numbers taken up, you know? So it's like, yeah, well, I guess at what point do you, obviously, they just did Hossa last year, which I think is fully deserved. Like, Haas is one of the best players, you know, to come through there. So
yeah, and that's the thing. You know, the Hawks bungled this, and a lot of it had to do with the unfortunate timing and passing of Rocky Wirtz, because this was one of the wishes that he had upon his deathbed. So you had to honor that. And then they start the Ring of Honor, which should have been started years ago, because like you said, you can't retire every number. But there's so many Hulks that need, that deserve to be honored. Steve Larmer's 28 should have been in the rafters 25 years ago, and it's not there. So there's a, they should have done the Ring of Honor. And if you've done the Ring of Honor, you eliminate the need to retire number seven, because you just put both Seabrook and Chelios in the Ring of Honor. You don't even have this conversation debate if you have a Ring of Honor. They made these whole stipulations now that basically would prevent Corey Crawford from ever having his number retired, but he would be involved in this Ring of Honor that's supposed to start. I think they're going to time it with the centennial season, so 26-27.
Right.
But you have the Ring of Honor for guys like Patrick Sharp, you know, Corey Crawford, guys who didn't quite get to that level where they would be retired in numbers, not necessarily Hall of Fame credentials, but, you know, were key pieces in big teams for the Hawks.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, for sure. There's so many guys you go down that list, and they had the same team together for a few years. So, yeah, you have two, three, or
even Hulsa, as great as, you know, what he did, he's such an underrated piece. I mean, you just look at how that team dropped off as soon as he was gone, or even the times when he was injured. But you know, once again, fringe on retiring his number. The guy played a ton of years in other places as well. You could have put him in the Ring of Honor. So, they screwed that up. That should have been a thing that had already been established, and you move that on. And like I said, you just every year you have a couple of guys you keep adding to the Ring of Honor. That's what the Cowboys, a lot of NFL teams do that. You were seeing more NHL teams as well adopt that same kind of system.
You're going to run out of numbers at some point, you know, 100 years from now, where you know that's if you do the number retirement for every great player in the franchise.
That's the I said almost like they should, like I get it. It's so cool. My dad had his jersey retired over in the UK, so we always grew up looking at Perlini 11 up in the stands.
And that's why you were born there. By the way, Brendan Perlini was born in England because his dad was playing there at the time. Yeah. And that's where he was. Yep. That's where the fam was. Yep.
I mean, so it's the coolest thing, I think, to have that. But in the same sense, I almost like more of like the soccer kind of style where, you know, Messi leaves Barcelona, but someone still wears number 10. And, like, I get that there might not be another Messi and stuff, but, you know, I guess it's even the way, like, you know.
Hey, you got the Barca shirt on. I just realized that.
Yeah. And guys wear, like, LeBron wears 23.
Yep.
And, you know, it's, I don't know. I guess you can have a conversation for days on this sort of stuff.
No doubt. So after Chicago comes Edmonton. Now, it was the 2021-2022 season. I know it was the regular season that you played there. That was the year they went to the Western Conference Finals against Colorado, and they lost in that conference finals that year. That close they were, the Oilers, that season. Now, you were in there for the regular season. You got, I think, into 20-plus games in the regular season that year. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm trying to remember. Did your 10? That was the year that they made the coaching change in season. Dave Tippett was fired and Jay Woodcroft took over. So were you there for the Tippett time or were you there for the Woodcroft time or maybe a bit of both?
I was there both. I went down the last month of the season. Like if the season finished first week of April, I went down in start of May. And I was down there in May and we played in the playoffs and stuff down there. Yeah, I mean, coming into to Edmonton, so I'm sort of a Dave Tippett guy, per se. Played under him in Arizona. And I went over during the 2021 season, like right when COVID and all that bullshit was going on. The NHL had the late start there. That's when they did the half a season with no fans. They were doing all those taxi squads and stuff. I just come off a year in Detroit. Team wasn't very good. My contract was up. I had a couple other opportunities with some teams that, you know, they said sort of start out on the taxi squad and stuff. And I kind of had a conversation with my dad where I'm like, you know what? Even like it's going to be a half a season regardless. I don't know if I'm willing to go somewhere and just kind of sit around maybe on a taxi squad, maybe play a handful of games. You know, I think development wise, like, I don't think I'm going to, like, improve. I felt like the year prior in Detroit, played some games, but the team's so bad, and I was in and out and in and out, and you feel like you don't gain any traction or ground on, like, becoming a better hockey player. It's sort of just like...
Your development, you feel stunted with the development.
Yeah, well, you're kind of in this system where it's like, you know, you're trying to win games, but it's kind of the same sort of process, and I guess it's sort of hard to describe, but... ended up going over to Switzerland, played a couple months in the...
Ambri Piotta, if I say
yes.
It properly.
Yeah. So played in Ambri, had a great time. You know, you're playing 25-plus minutes a game, so you get the mojo back, and I was feeling really good coming back. And, like, the whole plan was just go over, almost like a training camp before, like, coming back to the NHL, you know, just getting to feel good again, puck touches, scoring goals, things like that, and just feeling good. When I came back, I had a few teams kind of sniffing around, and Edmonton was one of them, and obviously knew Tip, like, well, and so I got a hold of Tip in the summertime, because he's out in Arizona as well, and said, hey, let's meet up for a coffee, and love to just see you and chat with you, and let you know where I'm at and stuff. And yeah, ended up, working out pretty well, obviously coming in, and sort of had to earn my way in per se, and had a really good preseason and stuff like that. And, the team wasn't like, I think at first we started out really hot, if I remember. And then, you know, we sort of dipped and like,
it was a bad dip, I think, December, January, if I remember.
Yeah, I think we had two different stretches of, like, six or seven game losses. But, you know what? Tip was, like, it's a hard job coaching McDavid and Draisaitl. And, like, those are the best guys. So if you're not winning, you're going to get scrutinized, right? And I don't think that, like, everyone – I don't think anyone does it majorly different from the next guy. It's just a different voice. Yeah. Sometimes, like, you know, we almost had that in Detroit where I was only there for one season, but I could tell, like, older guys on the team were so tired of Blashill's voice, you know, because he had been there for 5-6 years.
That's probably because it sounded a lot like Mike Babcock's voice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just insane, the same similarity with their voice.
Exactly.
I mentioned that more than once. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He was Babcock Jr. Yeah. With that voice.
I know. It's like you hear the same thing. Well, I think one of the things we got to do here is we got to look to is one of those things there. That's the Babcock voice. Yeah.
So
we got good people. He's a good family man. Good man. Yeah.
But yeah, it, you know what? Like, and it was so great because, like, Tip was, he was just so honest. Like, he could talk to me, you know, because we had a prior relationship. He knew, you know, good things I could do, not so good things, like where to put me that would bring me success. And it was just sort of unfortunate where he was under a lot of heat where I never really, like, he was sort of handcuffed in my regard. And so I wasn't really able to show anything because those guys play, you know, they log a lot of minutes. And it was myself, Devin Shore, Kyle Turris, like, we were getting 4 or 5 minutes a game. And, you know, like, you guys can strap on the skates and go play 4 or 5 minutes in a game right now. Like, it's, you don't do anything out there, you know. It's one shift a period, and a half shift.
Barely see the ice. And
so it's, you know, you can't. Yeah. And it's funny, too, because, like, as much as I love the people in the Edmonton fans and I do have a really soft spot for all the people out there, but one thing that I never really enjoyed hearing was just the fact that, you know, some people saying, wow, like, because I had in preseason, I had, I believe 8 goals in 7 games and I led the preseason in NHL scoring that year. And I thought I was going to get a really good crack at it. And I never really did. The first game was 4 or 5 minutes. And, you know, it stayed like that for pretty much most of the games that I played. And anytime that I did get minutes, I actually went on a good run right around Christmas. I was playing maybe just over 10. I had like 4 goals in 4 games or something like that, or I don't even remember what it was. But long story short, I was going to just say, like, you know, it's hard hearing, I guess, as yourself, like, oh, well, Perlini, he, you know, he never really, he had a good preseason, but he never really lived up to that. And it's like, dude, what do you want me to do in 4 minutes? Like, I'm not going to go out there and score a hat trick every shift. You know what I mean? Like, you need time to play. So
ice time. And the thing is, too, it's, and we talk, how many times do we talk about this during an NHL game when a team is in the penalty box the whole game? And all of a sudden, the ice time is cut down for the top players because they're killing penalties all night. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, no wonder he didn't have a great game. His minutes were way down. You need to have minutes on ice to get rhythm to get, you know, to be able to feel the puck and to be able to get the speed of the game and get up to speed and be able to play at that kind of level. And to your point there, you're barely getting 4 minutes of ice time. It's just hard to make any sort of impact when that's the case.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know what, regardless, like, I love the people out there. I love my time in Edmonton. Really, like, as the road team coming there, there's a lot of negativity about certain cities, about Edmonton, about Winnipeg. You come in off the road, you fly, like, you usually practice in the morning. You'll probably fly there in the afternoon, get there at 3, 4 p.m. It's already dark in the wintertime. Snowbank's 10 foot high, cold as fuck. So, as the road team, you know, if you're coming from Chicago, unbelievable restaurants, you know, cool spots to go, great city vibes, you know, and you come into there, you're like, where the fuck are we? But, you know, I'm
not exactly New York, LA, Toronto. Yes, yeah, yeah.
90% of guys were walking off the plane, you know, kind of doing one of those. But coming in there at the start of the season, seeing it from still like a summertime, no snow, like the actually getting the lay of the land around there. It's actually a good city. Like, I really enjoyed my time there right from the start. And then I got to, you know, you sort of appreciate like the build up to winter. I wasn't, you know, everyone always bitches and complains about winter, but I actually really enjoyed it there. I would go and
I ain't complaining. It's 70 degrees here today, Fahrenheit, baby, here in Hamilton. Yeah.
here too, in St. Paul. Yeah, we're almost in the mid-60s, high 60s. Yeah.
That's short sleeves. Well, I shouldn't have short sleeves. You know, I have no muscles, so we'll show that.
It was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, got to play with some great players and some good memories for sure.
Yeah. Well, I say, Brendan, isn't this a thing, you know, we talk about with free agency and stuff, and we talk about the different cities, talk about how, you know, like I said, guys like playing in there and living in Arizona when they're playing with the Coyotes or Chicago and stuff. That makes a difference when, you know, a guy's looking at, you know, where he's going to sign. He may not be tempted to go to a Winnipeg or Edmonton, being in the cold, a quieter city like where I am right now in St. Paul or Columbus. They might want to be more with the hustle and bustle of a Vegas or Chicago or something, and that plays a big role as far as free agency goes.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, look at let's take like the Russians, like Panarin, right? Those guys love, like, you know, I hear it from those type of guys all the time where they're like, oh, Moscow is like New York City, like we love to go to New York City. So, you know, those guys want to be in that area, unless their only option is to sign in a place like that. You know, then they'll try and go to like the big cities and those sort of places.
Which, of course, you didn't get to play with Artemi Panarin because he had gotten moved from Chicago to Columbus for Brandon Saad, and what's one of the worst trades in Blackhawks history. But
you know what I noticed too from looking at the roster when Brandon was on Chicago 18-19. You know who was on the Blackhawks that season? You know,
Cam Ward.
Gustav Forsling. Oops.
Oh yeah.
Oops. Yeah. Oh. Oops.
Yeah.
Might want that one back again. Yeah.
But Anton Forsberg also coming back in that Columbus deal. Look how he turned out. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I totally forgot Forsling had some time with Chicago. Now look at him in Florida now with the Panthers. He's turned into like a top flight defenseman. Like he's right there almost with Ekblad and Montour in terms of importance, minutes he plays, you know, how much better he's gotten consistently year in and year out. As an NHL defenseman,
he would not have grown to be this kind of defenseman if he stayed in Chicago.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, so sometimes guys need that, right? Like, you need a different, like,
you can tell I'm speaking to a Blackhawk fan and Blackhawk player with that, baby.
You need, I don't know, you just need a guy to believe in you and give you that, you know, trust and go ahead. And yeah, sometimes it's all it takes.
Exactly. We got a positive comments here. Samantha, I want to put this on the screen here. Gonzalez, he is great with storytelling, talking about Brendan being so open and honest with it. Very cool. There you go.
There you go. Awesome.
He is, by the way. My goodness. The stories and the recollections you've given of the 10 years that you had, Arizona, Chicago, Edmonton. One last question now, briefly about your AHL team this year. Then we got a special surprise for you, Brendan. We do this with every guest that we have on the show. We'll get that ready in a moment. And then we'll talk the NHL slate, Masters Golf at the end, and we'll get through it. We'll have a longer show today, but that's all right. It's a great show. Good to have Brendan with us. One thing I want to ask you about Edmonton, though, because he was there. I think it was his first season in Edmonton. Zach Hyman. Look what this guy is doing now. 50 goals. He's gotten even better. And he was already good in Toronto. But people said, oh, he plays with Matthews. That's why he's so great. Then he goes to Edmonton, and then people say, he's with McDavid now. That's why he's so great. No, you know what I see? I see a player that's great in Zach Hyman. I see a guy that works his balls off every fucking night. It goes to the corners, wins puck battles along the boards, goes to the front of the net, willing to take a pounding to score goals in the blue paint, in the crease area. And I'm seeing someone that's really worked on his release. People always said his shooting was not always up to snuff. He's worked on that, and I think he has put in the work. He's gotten better as a pro, and I don't think this narrative about him playing with Matthews and McDavid as being the catalyst for his production and his level of play at the NHL, it's a bunch of hogwash, garbage. I think he has worked at it. He's gotten better. He was there, and you were there. You got to see him. Zach Hyman, talk about him then when you were on the Oilers and now, because what he's done this season is incredible, and I don't think it's any more of this talk that it's all McDavid because he plays with him.
Yeah, I think there's – what people are missing here too is usually a reason that a guy plays with Matthews or McDavid, or, you know, it's not like you're just like, they don't just throw the lines in a blender and go, okay, he's with McDavid. Like, you know, there's obviously a reason that they put him with it. And like you said, he's such a hard nosed guy and in the corners and battling. And like, that's what I just got from him. Aside from, he's such a nice guy off the ice, and he's a really big team guy, which is awesome. Like, great guy in the room. But he's extremely strong on the puck and just like, I guess, I don't know how to say it. He would be a guy you just like, you want to play with. Like, when I think of building, I guess, like your ideal sort of line, you know, you're like, I almost think like centerman and one winger, like if they're two skilled guys, okay, you need a guy who's going to get them the puck and who's going to be around the net. And
the grunt work of the line. Exactly.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And anytime, yeah. like I think of, I can only, you know, talk about, I guess, myself in this regard of anytime I've had success, I've been with a guy like that. Like in junior, I played with myself. Carter Verhaeghe was my centerman. So us two guys were the kind of skill guys. We had another guy, shout out to Frush, Anthony DeFrugia. He was the real like glue of the line, digging pucks out for us, moving it, going to the net, being in guys' faces. If anyone touches us, he's all over them too. Like, you know, you need a guy like that. So that's the guy. And there, you know, there's no coincidence that he plays with Matthews. He plays with McDavid. You put him with anyone, he's going to be good. Like, he's just that sort of player where sometimes, you know, like even myself in certain regard, I'm like, I can't play with that guy. Like there's, and I'm not talking about Hyman. I'm just saying whoever it is, you sometimes you're like, no, I just don't click with that person. But with Hyman, it would be like, you play him first line, second, third, fourth, play him on D. Like, you know, guys are going to like to play with him. He's that sort of player. That makes sense for you guys.
And no maintenance, you know, no ego, no attitude, complete team guy through and through, which is how it comes across to me just watching from afar, that's the kind of player he is. So I'm thrilled with the success he's had. He's just been outstanding. I mean, 50 goals, what can you say? I mean, my goodness, what a year for him. And he's going to have a big hand in whatever success Edmonton has in the Stanley Cup playoffs coming up. There's no question about that. Your AHL season, Charlotte Checkers. Mm-hmm. We know you're on to the playoffs there, the Calder Cup playoffs. You've clinched a spot. I don't know, but I look at these standings, Brendan, and all I can think to myself is we're on a collision course again for the same damn Calder Cup championship series we had last year, in my opinion. Hershey and Coachella Valley, who had a heck of a series last year, and they're by far the best teams in their respective conferences right now in the AHL. But maybe your Checkers have something to say about that. How's your team doing?
Yeah, we'll see, I guess. I don't know, man. It's interesting in this league. It's totally different from the NHL. And it's even different, like, since my first season, I played, like, a half a season with Tucson. It was still, like, your older veteran guys. And now it's like, man, it's like a post-junior league is the easiest way to describe it. Like, you know, you don't really get, like, there's not a ton of, like, older, great.
Do you feel like the old geezer on the team? Is that what you're trying to say?
I don't feel like it because I'm 27, but sometimes you get looked at like that. And I'm like, you know, it's funny because you go from, it's like young guy, old guy.
You're like the veteran presence kind of.
That's how you know people sort of view you. And even in the NHL, it's like, you know, they love you up until 24, 25, and then it's like, oh well, he's I remember a team a couple years ago in the summertime, my agent saying that. And they were like, well, you know, you're 24 now and stuff. And I'm like, I'm 1 year off entry level. You know, what are you, they're acting like you're 40 years old. So but yeah, I guess to answer your question, it'll be interesting. Yeah, we'll see. You never know in this league. A short series. The first series is like three games or something, like a best of three. Second series, best of five. So it's quick, man. You never know. It can go either way. So who knows? We'll see.
If this episode hasn't become a 1 hour infomercial on why there should be a new international hockey league, I don't know what else could, because like you said, when the AHL changed that rule to where, you know, veteran guys could only play, you could only have so many veteran guys on a team. You could only have so many veteran guys dress in a given night. That took away, and that's why you end up having a lot of more, you know, more guys going to Europe. There's a whole lot of North American talent that could have stayed here in North America if you had the separate league. And you still have that growth and room for these guys, especially because we talk about this on the show all the time with younger players struggling. We talked about this with the Rangers, with Kaapo Kakko and Lafreniere, and you know they finally blossomed. But all of last season, like, give these guys extended time in the minors. Some of the greatest players in National Hockey League history had time in the I, had time in the AHL, extended time to work on their game. You don't have everybody just be ready right out of the gate, 18, 19 years of age, and be at the top level NHL player. That's a rarity. And I think we keep pressing that more and more. And I think that, like I said, there's a need for the AHL where guys can develop from juniors and from college and play, you know, that higher level of the pro game. You can have a league in the I where guys who were good and maybe fell off or had some extended injuries, but they're veterans. They don't clash with any team plans, but they're working on their individual game to build up and be better.
So they have an outlet for it.
Right, you have an outlet for it. You have that space, and we've taken that away, and it's knocked everything down, not just from a hockey level, but from a business level as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned mental health, by the way, Brendan. It's so important. I mean, Alex has had battles with it. Even me, I've had instances where, you know, you get depressed and, you know, you start thinking of things. And I wanted to mention that because one of your, of course, teammates in Charlotte, Spencer Knight, you know, he's been dealing with that. And we would certainly have wished him all the best. We like this kid a lot, Darien, Connecticut. We saw what he did in the World Juniors for Team USA. We saw little glimpses of just utter brilliance from him when he was with the Panthers, of course. Then he had to go. He went into the assistance program. And all I can say is I hope he's doing well, and we wish him all the best.
Yeah, no, really good guy, good kid. Yeah. Like, you know, we've talked a lot because, you know, like I said, we all go through our own thing. And sometimes it's publicized, I guess, when you're in the, you know, public eye of being a professional athlete or whatnot. But main thing is, yeah, you know, address the problem and hopefully, you know, find a way to or find a solution, whatever that may be, to help out of whatever it is. But I do think, you know, it, like, even want to say to whoever's watching, like, you know, I wouldn't be afraid to speak up about things and talk about it. And that's my number one thing, is like, you know, whether it's with my family or relationships or things like that, is usually boils down to communication. And, you know, I always like bottle things up and hold things and, you know, different frustrations or whatever it may be. And just to talk to someone and get it off your chest.
Yeah. Like, holding it in is not healthy. Yeah, it's not good. So,
whoever's dealing with anything out there and watching the show, you know, you're not alone, and just talk to anyone.
Yeah.
No doubt.
That's important.
No doubt. And that's why I'm here for Alex when he needs it, or anything. Yeah. And we're here for every, we want to help each other, you know, when we're going through times of struggles and battles and crisis and depression. And that's what it's all about, you know, help each other out, and it makes things a lot better. We're going to turn our attention to some NHL talk. Recap of last night. We'll talk the three games. We'll try to rapid fire through that because we still want to talk a little golf. Masters golf. Brendan's a huge golf enthusiast. I'm a huge golf enthusiast. Like, golf's, he loves his golf, and I like golf too, especially the majors. I'm locked in when it comes to the major tournaments, so we're looking forward to that. But first, before we get to the NHL talk, first time guests, when they're players on the show, Brendan, we have to do the old From the Vault segment, where we pick out a highlight from the player's career, and we surprise them with it. They don't know it's coming, but we've got it ready in the queue. And we've picked here a very interesting choice here, as far as let me just see if I can find it here on the in the queue here. But yes, and I remember, you know, we've had players on the show where we've done the video highlight, and they forgot that it even happened. It's like, oh wow, you picked a really good one. And for me, this was the obvious choice, and Alex agreed on it because he mentioned it to me, and I had already picked it out. This is Brendan Perlini playing for Alex's beloved Chicago Blackhawks, collecting his first career hat trick in what was a 7-1 beatdown for the Blackhawks over the Arizona Coyotes. Roll the footage.
The legendary Pat Foley.
Brendan Perlini, what a pass from Brent Seabrook to Stringham. That's four goals the last five games for Perlini, and it's got to feel awfully good against the team that traded him here.
Off of the stick of Goligoski, and then the quick wrister of Perlini.
Fisher and Galchenyuk bailed out. Didn't want any contact from Kane, so Cahoon's now got it. Cahoon centered it here. Strong in front. Quick shot. They score! Brendan Perlini came over the boards on a change, and Patrick Kane created that turnover when Galchenyuk just bailed. It's 3-1.
Strome and Perlini, two former Yotes, put the puck into the back of the Yotes net.
Murphy flipped it ahead. Bouncing puck. To bring it once. Perlini! Not sure if he touched it. It might be his first career hat trick. Brendan Perlini with 3 seconds to go. His first
unreal way to get the hat trick. 9 seconds. Just get a little smallest tick
a little
of the puck off your stick, and it's enough to give you that hat trick.
I can't believe I almost did that.
And Perlini gets just enough.
Yeah, and you had to chuckle with that one. Awesome.
So,
and then the St. Patrick's hat night, too.
You know what? Everything happens like for our family, the number 11 is just like, it's always based around that number. So that was March 11th. Funny enough, I scored my first NHL hat trick. But like, we have some really funny things in our family that, you know, good things, bad things that always kind of happen around that number. But like even this year, we played in an outdoor game here in Charlotte. I scored at 11 minutes in, 11 seconds. Like, just like crazy things. Yeah, crazy things. But
that was a buzzer beater hat trick, and just got enough of it too.
Yeah, I got two stories for you on that night. One of which, this first one here, I tell on my YouTube channel too about Jonathan Toews. So that night, like obviously feeling it, I've got two. I hit the post. I had another like breakaway or something. I hit the post. It hit the goalie's back and sat on the goal line. Like I could have had another one. I could have had four or five easy. And anyway, we get to like third period there. We're playing. Nothing's really like going in the third. And getting down, and there was like, I think 2 minutes left. He put me out for a shift, and I stayed out for a minute. And then there was like a whistle or something like that, and I came back to the bench. And there was still, you know, 45 to a minute left in the game. And as I'm coming to the bench, and, you know, I got on the bench, and the coach is like throwing guys out there. Taze turns around, like, and sort of, he doesn't say it directly to the coach, but he says, Perlini's going back out. 11's going back out, right? And as if to say, like, fuck off, whoever you're putting out there. Get back on the ice.
Wow.
And he turned and looked, like, directly at the coach. And the coach was like, yeah, Pearls, yeah, get back out. So for that moment, and then I end up scoring the goal with 3 seconds left or whatever it was. And, you know, like, talk about – like being a good guy, being a good teammate for that would have never happened if Taser wouldn't have, you know, stuck up for me and said, hey, get this fucking guy back.
That must have been Carlton, right?
Carlton that was Jeremy Carlton. Yeah. I was about to say, right? Yeah.
Yes, yes. He, you know, Taser basically.
He ain't doing that with Joel Quenneville, but he can do that with
no, because Quenneville, right? Quenneville would have had sense. No, Quenneville would have had sense enough already to put him out there.
Yeah.
Carlton, not so much. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I have, you know, always grateful for him for doing that for me. And, nice. Like, that's a pretty classy, pretty cool move, right? To look back on and be like, fuck, without him, like he told the coach.
That's a class act gesture.
That's
he knows, like, this kid's going for a hat trick here, Brendan Perlini. Get his ass out on the ice.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. I don't like it. Basically, you don't care if he plays the last 5 minutes. We were winning like 6-1 or something, right?
So, yep.
But yeah, that's I forget the other damn story I was going
to
tell you.
It's not surprising to hear Taser.
No, yeah. Captain for a reason.
It's not also surprising to see him as the captain usurp the head coach at the time, Jeremy Colleton.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me either, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, yeah, I go through, you know, I hate to keep plugging that, but I go through, you know, some stories like that on the YouTube channel.
You should be plugging your YouTube
channel. Oh, definitely plug it. Yeah.
Holy shit, man. You're going to do great fucking things with it. You're
some cool stuff.
Storytelling's unbelievable.
And with, like, I'm kind of doing some different episodes with golf and with hockey and mixing the two together and playing with different guys. And,
yep.
Oh, nice.
You know, so, yeah, some really cool stuff. Even just film one the other day of going through my worst injury in the NHL, which I got a skate through the nose and almost lost my eye. And kind of talking about everything basically.
Oh, I know the clip of that. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. Everything basically behind the scenes is going to be like my channel is based around, like the hockey videos would be based around what happens all behind the scenes and everything that you guys don't see. You know, when I'm laying on the ice, what's the trainer between, or what's the conversation between me and the trainer? We get up off the ice, I go back in the dressing room, what happens next? You know, my nose is cut open, where does it go? Then the next day, you know, what sort of happens. And I have a really cool story actually on there as well. When it comes out, hopefully people will watch it about the next day actually meeting Jimmy Fallon and my eyes all busted up and noses cut through. And so I got some cool stuff like that. So.
And yeah. And that's an interesting kind of take too, because we all, I've never really had privy to that, and even growing up, you know, around the medical field or whatever, but knowing what happens when a player gets injured, now, of course, that's a super severe injury, but just of any injury, we just see them go off to the locker room. We have no idea what happens in between that. You know, I've heard stories where guys, you know, they've had dental issues and they have the team dentist, you know, shoot them up, and, you know, guys getting stitched up, of course, but obviously with other things of, you know, are you getting treated in the arena? Are you getting sent to the hospital? Different things like that. I think that's a different perspective and the thing that, like I said, we've never had really privy access to, mostly because of HIPAA laws as well, but to a certain extent, though, it'd be interesting to kind of know more about what happens when we do just see somebody get hurt and go off the ice, and then we don't hear anything until, you know, days after or after the game.
No, definitely. Yeah, I appreciate that. I have a full, like, a bunch of videos basically lined up and a bunch of different ideas in my head of how can I pull back the curtain for you guys to get closer and see what actually goes on. just off the top of my head, what's it like getting traded? You know, I have text messages of, you know, the GM texts you, hey, this person's going to call you. This is what happens.
Yep.
I have different stuff of like, what's it like getting sponsored in the NHL? How much money do you earn with sponsorships, with Bauer, with CCM? You know, what happens in those sort of scenarios? How they treat you, like it, how different teams work. I'm going to really try and, you know, like I said, pull back the curtain a little bit where you guys can see, you know, some things.
That's why it's going to be a hit, because the NHL needs more of that. Why do you think the NHL just announced a deal with Amazon for this behind the scenes show that they're going to do? You know, they need more of that. They need more of that player access and stuff that goes on. They need something in the NHL like what we see with the quarterback show on Netflix right now for the NFL, or the golf one.
Full Swing.
Full Swing. That's it. Yeah. The NHL needs something like that. You got to grow these personalities. You got to get that connection between the fans and these players, and a behind the scenes look like what NHL and the Amazon Prime are planning for the fall is what's required to help grow the game. And I think what you're planning to do with your YouTube channel, it's like the stories behind the scenes and some of the stuff that goes on that you don't see. That's what the fans want. 100%. That's the kind of content hockey fans want, and people, and you can grow people into the sport by doing that.
Even like a lot of people don't know, you guys are obviously well versed in hockey, but a lot of people don't know, like, you know, you sign a contract that says $1 million. Well, you don't get $1 million, right? You pay into escrow, you pay into taxes, you pay your agent fees. So I'm going to break down what an NHL check looks like.
We know all about that with the taxes.
You know, like, how often you get paid, a weekly pay. There's all these sort of things that I think people would love to hear about. That is really, like, I don't really see anyone else out there sharing this sort of knowledge. And, but yeah, I got a bunch of things lined up like that. So hopefully
that's awesome.
People view in, and I'm going to try and go pretty full throttle with some stuff.
I'm sure it'll have to be a lot of name changing and you know, locale name changes as well for certain stories. But
yes and no. I'm trying to, like, I'm not out there to bury anyone or do it from any sort of negative point of view. Okay. You know, yeah, I think I'll maybe blur something out of, if it's a text message, I'll blur out the name of, you know, who it's from.
Yeah.
But I had one guy ask me, you know, just in, like, let's say, how to get a sponsorship in the NHL. One guy, I was testing these gloves out, and we were kind of going back and forth. And I'm like, not really too great. They don't really feel comfortable. And he texted me, what price would make you comfortable? ... And so, obviously, I'm not going to share who that is.
But, right.
You know, showing those sort of things of that's how it kind of
goes
on and works. And, you know,
yep.
So there's a lot behind it that, you know, it's just like any other job, really. Right. But you're just kind of finding out a little bit more info on what we do.
Yep. No, there's no doubt. And that's exciting. This what you're planning and the content you're planning to produce there on your YouTube channel. That's definitely something. Then we'll mention it as you start get it up and running and get it launched.
Thank you.
Well, we've got a good following. Like, we've got 5,000 YouTube channel subscribers. I mean, we've grown this thing for years, the Ice Guys, and definitely happy to help.
Everybody watching on Twitter today, we got a big Twitter following that's growing as well. So,
just stay like, to anyone who's watching, just keep sort of updated. You can check me out on my socials, just under my name, or at BubsP on Instagram, Twitter, that sort of thing. Yeah, it'll all be, you know, it depends. I didn't want it to sort of intertwine with what's going on here. And I figured, you know what, it gives me time to edit all this kind of stuff. As soon as, you know, we're done the season, boom, I'll start releasing one a week, two a week, whenever you get done.
Oh, of course, definitely. In season, it's hard to crank out the content, but definitely when the season's over, and then you'll be able to give it more focus and more attention, more time to put into it. Absolutely. Definitely makes sense. All right, we see you, everyone in the chat. You're waiting for our thoughts on the Wednesday card. We're going to get into it. We're not going to go game by game on the recap for Tuesday. All I'll say is that the BetCast last night was another fun one. We love doing them. We appreciate everyone joining us. It's a bar and a pub atmosphere every time. We just watch the games, we place our live bets, we throw back some beers. It's a lot of fun, and it was an enjoyable BetCast last night, a huge Tuesday card. Just the highlights, really. Philadelphia losing 9-3 to Montreal. It's just a horrendous loss. They at the bottom has fallen out for John Tortorella and the Flyers. It's hard to believe they're making the playoffs now. It's just been an utter disaster here these last few games. The goaltending, Airson's hit, the whole team's hit a wall. I mean, an ugly loss for them against Montreal. Washington, basically Detroit got Lindgren'd last night in that game. He was spectacular, and he was 1 second away from a shutout. Patrick Kane scores, but too little too late. Washington with a huge win in the push for the playoffs, 2-1 over Detroit last night in that game. The Islanders helped their playoff hopes with a big-time win, 4-2 against the Rangers. And I had over 5.5 as my best bet on the show yesterday, and there I am sweating right till the end, and I needed that empty net goal to put it over the total, but we'll take it. 4-2 Islanders beating the Rangers. We saw Tampa beat Columbus 5-2. Dallas survives Buffalo 3-2. Big win for the Jets to keep pace with Colorado in the Central, who won 5-2 against Minnesota. And the Jets beat the Predators 4-3. But the point that Nashville got in overtime clinches a playoff spot for them. L.A. getting beaten by Anaheim 3-1, one of the upsets last night. 5-0 Seattle over Arizona. 3-2 Calgary in overtime over San Jose. Very big, exciting Tuesday card. Alex, thoughts on what we saw last night?
Yeah, that Nashville-Winnipeg game, and it worked out perfectly for me from a betting standpoint. Had the draw, had Winnipeg. I know, Ian, you had Winnipeg and draw as well. So that was very nice to see. And now Nashville, you know, sitting comfortably now, getting at least a playoff spot. They could still move around a little bit. Like I said, that L.A. loss combined with what we're talking about tonight, Vegas going up against Edmonton, that's now made that game even bigger than it already was. So a big spot there. And do want to mention something too, because I know everybody was kind of giving me grief for taking that Dustin Wolf shutout bet yesterday. Sharks only had 20 shots on goal in that game. So that's now eight straight games for San Jose where they've had 27 shots or fewer. That may not be a bad bet the rest of the way against San Jose, looking at a goaltender to get a shutout, because this team is just shooting less and less. So there were some more deflections and pinbacks that went past Wolf, but Calgary was able to come back and get the win in overtime. But something to keep in mind with San Jose, these last four or five games involving them, maybe take a shot with the opposing team getting the shutout, because they're not shooting the puck that much, and it's not quality shots that have been going in for them.
No, it's William Eklund and a whole lot of nothing offensively right now for San Jose. But William Eklund's played great. He had the hat trick. He got one of the goals last night. But you're right, San Jose having a hard time getting that third. They're not getting anything from the third and the fourth line. That's a huge problem right now. The bottom six, you can't find him with a telescope on the ice right now for the San Jose Sharks. There you go. I got a smile out of Brendan. I'm saying I'm trying that my famous catchphrase there. We'll see if Brendan gets a laugh out of it. There we go. Yeah, that's what I say that all the time. Someone that has a terrible game can't find him on the ice with a telescope. Yeah, and that's what I go. That's my go-to. Brendan, do you anything you want to talk about and mention from last night in the NHL?
No. You know what? It's funny because I'm at a stage in my career here where sort of like I'm losing touch a little bit with following all the games.
Sure. But, well, that's going to happen. You're playing still. That's
I've just been watching for the most part. I'll check the standings every now and then on that Eastern Conference race there between Detroit and Washington. And like I thought Washington was just, you know, dead buried there a few months ago.
Yeah, you and everyone else.
Yeah the run they
and Pittsburgh for that matter. Yeah.
Yeah, them too. Yeah. So, it's going to be interesting. We'll see. Detroit was flying high for a while there, and then they kind of hit a wall and. So out of all of them, I mean, it's easy to say because Washington's in the spot right now, but they're almost looking like the best team out of them all. So we'll see.
It's anybody, and now the Islanders actually have all of a sudden looked like a pretty damn good team the last couple of games, and the big win against a terrific Rangers team last night. So it's still up for grabs, though. Detroit plays Pittsburgh tomorrow night. What a huge game that is going to be. Massive, because they're both on the outside looking in, starting play tomorrow night.
It's an eliminated. That's a game seven.
It does. It feels like it. No doubt. So we'll tee that up tomorrow on the show. We got three games tonight. We'll just go quickly through these. Chicago, St. Louis. St. Louis minus 230, home favorites, 5.5 the total. I've talked about it with St. Louis. They're out of it now. I'm not rushing to let it 2:30. Not to mention they're off the road trip as well, I believe. Back home off a road trip. Malinsky special spot. That's tricky. I mean, Brendan Perlini knows playing the game, right? First home game off a road trip. That's always difficult. That's always a tough spot more often than not for teams. And that's what you've got here with the St. Louis Blues tonight following the West Coast road trip. I know it was only three games, but still coming back from the West Coast. Chicago, meanwhile, is off that 4-0 shutout. They got blanked by Jesper Wallstedt of the Minnesota Wild in that one. They'll look to bounce back. I actually kind of lean dog here, Chicago, +190. But what I like more is the over bifecta here. You know, two teams that are out of it. I think we'll see some goals here. St. Louis, you know, I think defensively they're vulnerable a bit right now. We've seen them give up 6, 5, and 3 in their last three games. So I think we'll see a little back and forth here. Remember, the last time these teams played, it was right before Christmas in St. Louis. Final score was 7-5 in favor of the St. Louis Blues. It turned into one hell of a high-scoring affair. So for me, I'm on the over bifecta here. Alex, what do you think? Blackhawks, Blues.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I have Hawks +193. I got it bet online, but I also like the over in the first period, 1.5 -115, as well as that over 5.5. I've seen I got it actually $1.15 on that as well. So yeah, all decent prices and good spots. St. Louis is pretty much toast at this point. It just seems like they kind of roll off the puck. You know, Chicago would love to be the team to officially kind of put the end to St. Louis's playoff dreams. That's still a rivalry. Still division battle, and the Hawks.
That shows you how old we are, Brandon. We remember this was a true rivalry back when we were kids. Yeah.
One of the ones that still reside in the Central. But yeah, this definitely feels like it could be a spot where, you know, the Hawks, we've seen them play better on the road, as bad as of a team as they've been on the road this year. And this is still, like I said, one of the worst Hawks road teams I can remember, and probably in franchise history. But they've played better on the road the last few games. I think this is a spot where they step up. It's Peter Mrazek in that as well. So give me the Hawks and give me the over in the first period of full game.
There you go. Taking Chicago. It is Mrazek and it's Hofer. Joel Hofer, by the way, getting the start tonight for the St. Louis Blues in net in this game. So there we go with that. As far as the prop looks tonight, I would say right now for Kyrou starting to heat up again, it's worth noting. Now, I know Neighbors is out, and he's been a go-to. McEachern and Falk out for the Blues as well. Nick Foligno out for Chicago. But definitely, I think right now, Jordan Kyrou starting to heat up. You could go in that direction as far as player props. And we showed Brendan Perlini's terrific hat trick against Chicago from a few years ago on the show. And this is a real thing. You mentioned how Jonathan Toews spoke up for you, Brendan, about getting the puck to you, getting you your hat trick, trying to get you on the ice to get the hat trick. A lot of times when we see players get two goals in a game, I'm jumping on a live bet for them to get the hat trick. Why? We talk about this all the time on this show because they're going to try to feed that player the puck. They want to get the hattie for them, and they're going to maybe get them out on the ice more. Certainly if they're up by one or two late in the game and the opposing team has to pull the goalie, get that guy the puck to shoot for the empty net and get that hat trick. So yeah, that's something we talk about, Brendan, on this show, the live hat trick bet when someone gets to two goals, because they're going to try to feed him the puck early and often.
Yeah, most guys do as well. Like they realize that and they're like, especially if it's a guy who's well liked or whatnot in the dressing room, they're trying to give it to him. So yeah, I can definitely attest for that. And I can also say on these sort of games too, where if both teams are sort of out of it,
who's blocking a shot? They got tee times. They don't want to break a foot.
Exactly. If you're Chicago, I've been in that scenario with Arizona where you're like, all right, let's just fucking get this over with. And it becomes a high scoring shootout, you know, because no one really gives a shit. So I definitely like the over with what you guys said for sure, because those games can sort of become a little bit of a gong show, if you're way out of it.
No doubt they can be, and hopefully that's the case tonight with the Blackhawks and the Blues. All right, the game of the night, this is TNT tonight, Vegas and Edmonton, -110 both sides, even money, 6 the total in this game. Now, the line has come down. This was initially Edmonton around -150. So you say, how the hell have we seen like a 40-cent move in this game? Well, I'll tell you, when arguably the best player in the sport might not play, that's how you see a 40-cent move. Connor McDavid, he's not been ruled out yet, though. He's a game-time decision, true game-time decision. They'll see how he feels pre-game skate. But the fact it's now gotten to the point where he's a game-time decision kind of has me thinking they might rest him here tonight against the Vegas Golden Knights. That being said, I don't want Vegas. I don't love what I'm seeing. I saw a third-period collapse. I didn't see a great defensive game against Vancouver. I know they're trying to bounce back. These are important points. But even for Edmonton, they're trying to fend off Vancouver right now for first in the Pacific after the Canucks beat the Golden Knights the other night. I think the value is clearly on Edmonton now, with or without Connor McDavid in this game against Vegas. I haven't moved on it yet. We're going to wait to see if McDavid's in, because if he's ruled out, guess what? People are going to pour in betting Vegas here. Simple as that. The regular casual NHL fan is going to say Connor McDavid out, take Vegas. And I'll wait right to the last minute maybe and scoop Edmonton if he doesn't play at a better price, because I don't love what I'm seeing out of Vegas. And who the hell knows how Aiden Hill is going to play tonight? This is a guy that has struggled this season. Hasn't been able to duplicate what he did in the run to the Stanley Cup last year. He's been injured quite a bit. He hasn't played in a long time. You know, maybe he gets back to the old form of last spring, but I got to see it before I believe it out of him. What do you think here, Alex? Game of the night, TNT, Vegas, Edmonton.
I got to give you a slight not so fast, my friend. I like Vegas here in this spot. Now, granted, it is price-based. If you could have gotten Vegas earlier, by all means, you know, God bless you, you got plus money.
This Vegas is a plus 130 without McDavid. That's a good price.
I love Vegas plus 130 without McDavid. I like Vegas here at a pick'em price. I don't like Vegas if you're laying more than $1.20. Yeah. So if we get the official confirmation, you start seeing money on Edmonton, then that's where I go, okay, Edmonton. I think this game is properly priced without McDavid at $1.10. And with McDavid, I thought it was a little bit overpriced at 150. These are two teams that play each other well. Vegas has a little bit more to play for, in my opinion, than Edmonton. I think Vegas really wants to try to avoid falling into that central quadrant with that possible wild card battle. They want to get that third spot, and if they get the third spot, who are they going up against? The Edmonton Oilers. So I think that's kind of where their mindset might be in this contest. And yes, Aiden Hill has struggled, hasn't been the goalie that we saw lead them to the cup last year, that second half run. But this is a good time for him to get back into focus, playing against the Oilers team that will be a man short potentially with McDavid of all people. Yes, they still have a ton of talent with Perry. You still have a ton of talent with Draisaitl, Hyman. There's a ton of other guys that can step up. But we've seen times where if McDavid's not there on the ice, this team just gets a little bit out of sorts. So for one night, I'll back Vegas. Now, long term, I don't think this is going to affect Edmonton. It makes sense to sit him down, bring him back game one, round one, when you know it matters. So I'm taking a shot here with Vegas. I got minus $1.02. I like it all the way. Anything past $1.15, I would just stay off of this game and wait for something live.
There you go. Absolutely. And by the way, for Edmonton, it's Skinner, Stuart Skinner, in net for the Edmonton Oilers here in this one. What do you think here, Brendan? Vegas, Edmonton. It's definitely the game of the night of the three games taking place, no doubt.
You know what? I'm going with you guys here. I haven't been following the West enough to give big input, but yeah, obviously with no McDavid, it's always a little bit more of a boost for Vegas. I know that for sure when you're lacing it up and you don't see someone in the lineup who's the best player. But yeah, I'm going with whatever you guys say here. That's for sure.
Vegas, and it sounds like. Yeah,
Brendan, did you have any time cross lapping, or was that kind of too close with Aiden Hill when you were moving from Arizona?
Yeah, no, I played with Hillsy in the minors. Okay. In Tucson, and then the whole time I was basically up in Arizona, he was maybe came up once or twice, but then when I left, I think he got a little bit of a run there before moving on to Vegas. Yeah. Or I think no, he went to
San Jose.
San Jose there. But I mean, you said he sort of had, I guess, a tough season or whatnot, but it's always tough coming off, like, you know, when you go deep in the playoffs like that and you win cups or you get to the finals or whatever, it's tough going back to back and repeating and stuff.
Yep.
And like, you know, so I'm sure those guys are pretty banged up and tired and, you know, whatever else.
And we talk about that often with certain teams, most notably the Tampa Bay Lightning. We talk about when you have season after season after season of playing big time hockey, meaningful hockey over and over, it really wears on you.
Yes.
I don't know how the hell Tampa keeps getting back there every year. God, those are long seasons. Like,
the good news is they had a first round exit last year, so they're a little recharged now this year going into the playoffs because they got bounced in the first round last year by Toronto.
Yeah, for sure. So like that, you know what, this is a whole different other conversation, but just quickly, I want to ask your guys' thoughts on the playoff format, because I would love to see it go back to 1-8. Not a massive
absolutely
fan what it is now.
I'm ready.
I'm torn on it. I'm torn on it as someone who remembers the 1-8 setup, and I think this makes for some interesting battles. I like the idea of having teams within the division playing each other in the first round and second rounds.
Right.
I think that old school kind of 80s format, because we can see, all right, who's the best team out in the Pacific, the Central, yep, the Metro, the Atlantic at the end of the day. You know, now with the wild card, you flip things around. You have kind of, you know, an extra team that's throwing about. And okay, fine. Even if that means that the fifth best team or the fourth best team in that other division is better than that just shows you how strong that division was for that year. So I kind of personally don't mind this setup. I understand the drawbacks from it as well, but I'm cool with either one, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
All right, good stuff there. You know what? The 1-8, I'm a big fan. Oh, look at that. Would you look at that? Live on YouTube has finally kicked in. The show is like 3/4 of the way done now. So, but we are apparently live on YouTube. So just automatically I see the check mark now beside the Ice Guys YouTube channel. So there we go. Apparently they fixed the issues. But we thank you for make sure everyone on Twitter X. Glad you were able to get there to watch the show. But yeah,
this is recorded on StreamYard, right?
It is.
Okay. All right. So
I don't know how it's going to work with the archive and getting the podcast up, but I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I was going to say, me and you will probably be working on that. We'll try and get the whole show on YouTube and everything on podcast as quick as we can once we get off the air.
Yeah, no doubt. Because you definitely didn't want to start this show at 3:40 p.m. Eastern time and have an hour 40-minute delay. So we had to get the show going regardless, no doubt. As far as props in this game, Dorofiev, I think there's value, no doubt. Nugent Hopkins is up on the top line tonight with Dreisaitl, it looks like, and Hyman. So there is value on the Nuge tonight as far as props, because he's going to move up to the top line. That's another thing we talk about, Brendan, strategy with player props. Bet on the player moving up the lineup, third line to second line, second line to first line. It's not accounted for. And they're going to get more opportunity, more ice time. You're playing with better players, better opportunity for prop-wise.
Yeah, I would say that's a safe bet. Like, Nuge is an awesome player. He's a really, really good player. And sneaky, he'll, like, come out of a game with 2 points or 2-3 points. You won't even really notice it because he's not – as flashy as a McDavid or whatever, but you know, if you're a bet man on him to get a couple points, I definitely, you know, take him for sure.
No doubt. And the final game tonight, Arizona Vancouver. You know, funny thing, Brendan, is that we had Carter Hutton on the show last month, and the day we had him on, it was a Wednesday also. Like, pretty much all the teams he played for played on that night. You know, it was Arizona playing St. Louis and Philly, and all these teams that he suited up for, Nashville, Buffalo. Yeah. They were all playing that night. And here we go with you on the show. And I think we have 3 of the 4 teams you played for in the NHL in action tonight. The only one that isn't is Detroit. Arizona's playing, Edmonton's playing, and of course Chicago's playing tonight. So it's like it worked out. It's just it's the Brendan Perlini Bowl here on the Wednesday Ice Guys show, right? Vancouver -260, home favorite, 6 the total in this game. We don't have goalies confirmed, it looks like, for this one as of yet. Obviously, it's a back-to-back for Arizona. I don't know what the fuck happened to them last night. That was a very bad game for them. Shut out by Seattle, 5-0 to the Kraken. Kraken haven't been great the last month. They've fallen out of playoff contention, and Seattle just puts the boots to them last night, 5-0. You would expect Arizona to show a little better effort here tonight against a Vancouver team. Maybe they just weren't inspired, you know, Seattle, and then you got this game tonight. Maybe, I think you'll see Vancouver or Arizona play a little bit better tonight. Ingram projected but not confirmed in net. By the way, they have some injuries. Barrett Hayton's been out for a while. Nick Bjugstad now out. So we've got a little shuffle on the top line for Arizona tonight. Looks like Kerfoot, Schmaltz, and Keller is going to be the top line. Kraus, Cooley, and Gunther. The second line, Michelli, McBain, and Josh Doan. I always like doing Brendan Perlini. He's got the Italian background, so I'll say Matthias Michelli. There you go for the Arizona Coyotes on the third line. Josh Doan, of course, third line as well. He's gotten off to a great start. Ingram projected. Casey DeSmith projected for Vancouver. And if it's him, I'm interested in an over personally in this game. Vancouver starting to score again. We saw a little bit, you know, back and forth kind of affair with Vegas the other night with the Canucks winning 4-3. Arizona just gave up a 5 spot to Seattle. They were involved with Vegas on Friday night, another pretty good team in a wild up and down affair. They played the Rangers. It was an up and down affair. They kind of trended over. The Vancouver game in Arizona last week, exactly 1 week ago, was 2-1. But sometimes I like the reverse to happen. You know, when the same two teams play each other the next week, that we saw a low scoring game last week with these two teams. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the same here tonight. So this would probably be a look toward a little over six here. It looks like Shelovs might get the start again. Shelovs, actually, there's an H in there. Shelovs is apparently the way you say it. So Archer's Shelovs in net here for the Vancouver Canucks. Again, the Latvian netminder has been pretty solid, but we'll see if he can keep the good vibes going tonight. For me, I'll have a small look at the over. Nothing on the side, though, really, in this one. Vancouver probably wins, but I'm not taking them at any sort of price like this. Minus 260, not a ton of value. What do you like here, Alex? Coyotes, Canucks?
Yeah, this is a good live betting game. I'll be probably more than likely looking for first period and full game overs, but live, I'm going to get something closer to $1.10 or even plus money on the first period over, 5.5 laying a little bit of juice or plus money with the full game over. So that's the only thing I'm looking at here. Shelovs, 3-0, and it starts with Vancouver. I think two of those came against Anaheim, which that's not really saying a whole lot.
And then he takes Connor Vegas, Ingram. And they won, but, you know, a little shakier, obviously. Yeah,
and then Connor Ingram, who, you know, had a good first half of the season, kind of regressed to form in the second part. Now kind of at the end of the year, not sure what you're going to get from him from a night-to-night basis. So this could be, we could expect to see goals here, but I don't think we're going to get a lot of stuff right out of the gate early. So we should have some time to get some better adjusted numbers and prices on the first period and full game over.
Yeah, number one player prop, Alan's got it right in the chat. He's got it 100% right. Garland. Connor Garland over and over again. He's been great. He had a two-goal night against Vegas the other night in the victory. He's against his old team, the Arizona Coyotes. And that's another thing we talk about, that angle, the player against his old team. It's uncanny, unfucking canny how many times he scores a goal.
You always want to shove it down their throat, right?
No doubt. And so Connor, and plus he's in great form right now. Connor Garland playing on that second line for Vancouver. So, yeah, there's no doubt a Vancouver Connor Garland look for sure tonight with Miller and Joshua. Besser, Pedersen, and Hoglander remaining on the top line. For Arizona, you know, I don't think they're going to get shut out tonight. I think they'll have a better pushback tonight than they did against Seattle last night. So I would probably target Kerfoot's now on the top line center spot. Maybe he's worth a look. Cooley and Gunther and Doan. You know, basically the players I've talked about that I think are worth a look here. But yeah, Connor Garland, probably my number one player prop on the entire board between the three games tonight taking place in the NHL. Great stuff. Brandon, we're going to hit up the Masters now before we wrap up the show. The Masters Golf, we're all excited. Most of us are. Alex is not a big golf guy, I will say that. He's not. But the Masters is coming up. I'll just throw this out rapid fire. I mean, we know that this course, Augusta, is legendary. We know that this course is obviously there's a certain group of golfers that every time they could be in the worst form possible going into the Masters, but they've got a great track record at Augusta National, and they are able to just all of a sudden play very well on this course. And that's what Brooks Koepka comes to mind, for instance. You know, he's going to be a popular pick. I think he's in the 20-1 range, plus 2,000. Brooks Koepka has to be on the card. I'll throw out a couple others, and this is in talking with a lot of smart golf people about this tournament. I bet back in the fall Victor Hovland to win every major because I think this kid is close. He's got that demeanor to close strong. He's been a closer in some of these tournaments that he's won. Good Sunday player. That's what you want, especially in the pressure of a major championship. So I like Victor Hovland, you know, I think maybe to finally get that first major. I like Joaquin Niemann. I think he not only form-wise, but what he can do here at Augusta, Joaquin Niemann as well in that 25-1 range. The Aussie, I don't know, might Cam Smith, you know, might be, I think, worth a look here as well. He's had a good past here at Augusta. I'll throw a couple darts out there as well. Sergio and Adam Scott. Sergio Garcia, Adam Scott. I'll mention those two guys because Adam Scott has had success here in the past. Sergio Garcia, not only a former Masters champion in 2017, Sergio Garcia, check out his form on the LIV Tour coming into this tournament. Yeah. He's heating up right now. And you're getting upwards of, what, 150-1 in some spots here for a Serge in this tournament. So, you know, definitely I think that's not a bad look. A lot of people like Schauffele, Xander Schauffele, and I get it, but I have not loved his finishing on a Sunday in some of these recent months from what I've seen. So that does concern me just a little bit about Shoffley. Scheffler, if you're going to – Shoffley and Scheffler. Scheffler's the one I'd probably prefer. Scotty Scheffler here in this. What are a couple others too? A couple of darts here, as I like to say, longer shots here. Jaeger to be the debutante is a good bet, I think. You know, to be, because he's, I think, in the Masters for the first time. His form's been very good. Fuck, he just won a couple weeks ago for me at the Houston Open. I was very happy to see that. So I think debutante plus 1400 is a good shot there with the Jaeger bomb there. Stefan Jaeger. Who else there? Åberg, the Swede, you know, for a little bit of a longer odds type of shot, which I'm very accustomed to doing. I'm taking a shot with, I don't just bet favorites. I'm not just betting your Spieth and your Rory McIlroy.
What would he be at, that Åberg there?
Åberg, let me check out I think he was in the 80 range the last I checked. I'll see what the updated updated numbers are right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Guys like him, like a debut guy, is always, they either do really well or they fucking hack it up. Like, there's sort of no in between sometimes. So it's tough, but you got to like, I mean, the guy's game is unbelievable. He's a great player. And I think the one, like, if I had to put my money on someone right now, I would go with that Joaquin.
Actually, Åberg. He's 30-1 right now. There's been a huge move on Åberg. So 30-1. He's up there. He's up there. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that Neiman that you said. He's been playing great on LIV. Like, I follow both tours just because I'm a big golf fan. And I think he's really, a lot of those LIV guys are really slept on just because of, you know, the stupid thing with the tour and all that. And, but it doesn't mean they're not good golfers, right? So. Like even you said, Garcia, you know, like I think he played great last
former
week.
Former champ in blistering form right now.
Yeah, really, he lost in the playoff last week, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Now I'm a golf neophyte, and like I said, but I knew it was a whole big story with the PGA.
He's 100-1 right now, Sergio. By the way, 100-1. Yeah.
Can you guys break down to someone who knows nothing about golf? What's the difference between the two tours? As far as just like the quality of play, because like I said, I've heard people kind of, you know, knock and say that they don't like the format with LIV and the format with PGA. Yeah. You know.
I'll direct that to Brendan.
To me? Okay. I would say it as basically your idea for what you were talking about earlier with hockey.
Okay.
Somebody like the Saudis came along with a ton of money and, you know, wanted to start something different. And they do it a different way. They only play three rounds. They play with music on. You know,
it's like nightclub golf.
Yeah, they can wear what they want. They can wear shorts. Background. As far as the golf goes, like nothing really. Like the game is the same.
You can wear shorts. That's another thing too. No dress code.
Yeah, they play the game of golf the same. They play 18 holes. They, you know, it's still got to get the ball in the hole. So that doesn't really change. It's just kind of a lot of political bullshit around it, and you know, a lot more like. It's like guaranteed money and stuff like that. And so that kind of side of it is just, you know, that's
so,
as far
so
as
the golf's the same.
That doesn't really concern us.
But. The golf's the same, but the guys get paid more and it's a more relaxed atmosphere.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I get why the PGA is scared because they realize this might take them out at some point that seems a lot more interesting to watch.
Dude, those Saudis, they said something ridiculous. Like the people who are backing them. Or not, I shouldn't say backing them, but their oil money worth, they said something, it was like $15 billion or something, you know? So they got endlessly deep pockets. And I like it. I think competition creates like good stuff. And, you know, I'm not a fan of the old, how do I say this? Like the old white haired guys in sports and golf is very like that, man. You got your country club fucking stuffy guys.
Yep.
If you don't do it this way, they exile you, right?
Yep. And so you gotta follow the procedure and all that.
Yeah, yeah. So you kind of got, you know, people who have gone against the grain here and want to create something different, and basically those old fuckers didn't like that. You know, so that's the easiest way to kind of.
Well, imagine we had Saudi Arabian money in hockey. Wouldn't that be something?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Basically, it was like, what was the old, is it WHA? It was like, you know, you had something, or I don't know if you're a wrestling fan, but like you know, WWF and WCW. That's your kind of thing going on right now. Right. So, yeah, we'll see. But at the end of the day, you know, there's still, like, for the Masters concerned, the guys are still good players, and it doesn't mean they can't play just because they're playing on a different tour and wearing shorts, you know. Like, as far as, you know, what you guys do when you're putting your hard-earned money on someone, like, God, to, you know, take all biases out of it, right? And, you know, so, yeah, I guess that's the easiest way to kind of describe it. Sorry if I was going on there a little bit.
Oh, that's good. I mean, there's a significant difference. And the thing is, too, when I first watched the LIV Golf, I was all confused. Like, wait a minute, they got the individual, you know, battle like usual, and then they got this team event thing going on. It's like, and sometimes you get mixed up, and it's like, it's hard to keep track of both, but that unique portion. They have an individual and a team event in every tournament with LIV. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, see, it's more interesting to watch. Like I said, just from somebody who's on the outside, I would be more tempted because, you know, regular.
I appreciate PGA, that it's different. Yeah.
Regular PGA, where I nap to on a Sunday in the summertime. Like you said, but having music and enthusiasm and the crowd being into it, like, what's that tournament? Is it the Waste Management Open in Phoenix?
Yeah.
Where it's like
big where, like,
the Wasted Management
Open. Right, right. It's like having more of that in golf. And I'm like, I get that a lot of the traditionalists might not like that, but once again, if you're trying to bring in a newer audience or just a different demographic, having that option, okay, fine. Once, and like I said, split them up. They don't need to be blended. We don't need to have music playing during all the PGA events. You know, the Scottish Open doesn't need drum and bass, but have something that's available for, you know, as an alternative.
Yeah, and that's basically what it is, man. I think, like, I don't know if you've if either of you have gotten the chance to go at all, but a really good buddy of mine has gone to a LIV event, and he said, like, he's like, man, it's night and day difference. Like, if he said for that, LIV blows PGA out of the water. Because
let your hair down party vibe. Yeah.
He said they had a concert beforehand, Nelly or someone beforehand.
Oh, okay.
Then everyone comes, and he's like a big golfer too, like, you know, scratch player and stuff. Everyone comes on the range at the same time because they shotgun started. So they all tee off at the same time. That's like one of the things, you know, with the tournaments, like sometimes, and I've gone to PGA tournaments where you're there all day and, you know, cause guys are teeing off at 7 a.m. and some guys tee off at 3:30. And so he said, everyone's on the range at the same time. So you can see everyone, you know, music playing, very chilled atmosphere. Everyone tees off at the same time. You see everyone. And then they got after another concert or another event. And, you know, they're really kind of trying to do different shit. And, like, I'm not one way or the other. I'm not promoting.
And everyone starts their round on a different hole. That's why they're able to tee off, you know, at the same time, everybody.
Oh, okay. Yep. That's cool.
So, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm never opposed to anything. Like I said, I try to embrace change. People hate change, right? Yeah. And so when you've played golf like this for,
I like the standard PGA format more, but I'm not against LIV for doing it the way they're doing. They're trying to be different. They're trying to be unique. And I
think if there was some, like, you know, if they were somehow able to mix it or whatever and go, like, back and forth, whether the players want to play on PGA Tour one week and LIV on the net, like, it would be cool. It'd be really cool. But, yeah, it's sort of right now that freaking WWE thing going on really between the two of them. So,
Well,
and make sure the best golfers get to play in the majors. That's all I care about.
They should figure something out with that. Yeah.
Right. And you know, and that'll probably naturally blend itself in due time. You know, like I said, as just the game grows and the time moves on, there will be elements that the PGA will say, hey, we could adopt this from LIV and use that, and it still fits in with our traditional format, or, you know, expands enough to where it's not rocking the boat too much.
You don't get change unless somebody, you know, radical like this comes along and it's like, fuck yeah, we ain't scared to do it our way. And then, you know, when this first came out, like when LIV was first going down, all of a sudden the PGA, like, you know, they were seeing the money that there was John Rahm getting in $500-600 million and stuff, like, guaranteed.
They panicked. They freaked out. They shit their pants.
Yeah, and all of a sudden they're getting now they're like, oh well, we're gonna elevate now this and this event is gonna have a $20 million purse instead of a $10 million purse. And guys were like, you're hearing on the tour, they were like, well, where the fuck did this extra $10 million just come from? You know, so that's a lot of the white haired shit that I'm talking about in the background. That, who knows, man? Maybe those guys are stuffing their pockets and, you know, short change in the players. But without that radical change like that, like the PGA Tour guys are certainly benefiting from this, you know, right now. Yeah.
When that happened, then they were showing the breakdowns of how, because I knew, you know, how, you know, of course you have your winner gets the most money, but how the payouts go for guys who finish in 20th or 40th. And when they showed how Liv was paying them out, and it goes, oh, well, it makes a lot of sense. And it's like, yeah. Golf is, you don't have to follow golf to know there's money in golf. Where's all the money going? So, like you said, the fact that they're being transparent and everybody's getting paid and getting paid handsomely, that's a good thing to see as well.
Yeah.
Look at the 11, whatever the YouTube issues were, it's led to 1,100 combined viewers right now. And I think that might be a record for the most people watching the show at one time. Awesome. So that's pretty good. 1,100.
Hey, I told you 11, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Just
there you go. 100% nice. You did. All right. Let's get your final Masters picks here, Brendan. Who do you like to win? And also someone's asking Raymond, your thoughts on Tiger Woods and his career and what he's got left. So.
Tiger's the GOAT. Yeah, I mean, like, even a week like this, you can't not, like, he might be sniffing around, right? At this point, it's kind of like he's so beat up. Can he walk the course and stuff?
Yeah, of course.
But
he could withdraw. He could miss the cut, and he could be in contention on Sunday.
Exactly.
There's, like, wide range of variance here. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I'd absolutely love to see that again. You know, 2019 was, like, one of the best days ever for me watching that.
It's amazing. Yeah.
That. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, he's the best, man. He's, at least, you know, in our generation and whatnot, and for what he's done for the game is like how many people he's brought into it and stuff. But as far as my rest of my Masters picks go, I mean, obviously, you know, very easy to say Scheffler, like the hot guy, won whatever, two times in a row there, and then finished second or whatever it was. I think it's hard to not say him. I do like Koepka, which you said. Obviously, he always shows up in the majors. Really high on Joaquin Niemann, I think, is like somewhat of a sleeper. I don't know what he is in the odds-wise of what you said.
30-1 in that range, yep.
One guy who I actually think who's at least like my sleeper, who's they haven't talked about a lot on the Golf Channel is Bryson DeChambeau. I think I follow a lot of DeChambeau stuff. I think he's been playing like pretty good. His finish,
the short game going to be there. Is the flat stick going to be working?
That's if he gets that going, because he's like, I've been following his stuff on YouTube. He's got some really good content, and he was saying like he's never felt as good with the driver. When you get a guy who's hitting it 350 plus every time on a rope, like it's hard to beat. But yeah, if he puts it together on the greens, I think he could easily be a sleeper for sure. He shot 58 or whatever last year or whatever it was. So who knows? Those are kind of my four core guys here. And then you said Cam Smith. I like him too, but he came out and said he's been struggling with his driver. So that's not really a place that you.
No, that's the one concern. You don't. You don't love hearing that. You're right about that.
He is. It's almost like he's such a good putter that sometimes it offsets it. But
right.
Yeah, it's – then, you know, you have like a Mickelson or something. Like there's the old boys who, like, they've won. Bubba, like, you know, these guys, they've won there before. And they just know how to get around the place. So, but those are my kind of four core guys there.
Yeah, I'll throw in a couple more. Thigala. I don't mind at 45-1. Sahith Thigala, Nick Taylor, the Canadian. I got to have one Canadian.
Yeah, he's had a good run, too.
He's had a good year. And, of course, the Canadian Open, that was just amazing last year what he did there, that epic win, snapping the drought of Canadians at the Canadian Open. I'll be there, by the way, Canadian Open, right in my backyard this year.
Oh, nice.
I'll be going to at least one or two of the days, Hamilton Golf and Country Club, Ancaster, Ontario. So I'll be there and looking forward to that Canadian Open coming up. Nick Taylor, 175, and then I'll throw one more, Harris English there at 140. A couple of longer shots there that I'm going to invest a few shekels in, a few bucks in that. We could have actually gone 3 hours, but we're going to wind it down. And we'll definitely get you back on probably once your season's done. We'll get you
for sure
back on.
Yeah, anytime, guys.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a lot of fun. No question about that. Shout out to everyone in the chat. We'll jump right in. By the way, you know the deal, patreon.com/iceguys, $10 per month. Sign up there for our daily sides, totals, player props, bonus content, more Patreon exclusive live betcasts, 3 coming up here in April, and the Ice Guys store, iceguys.myspreadshop.com.
Yes, we got another special coming up pretty soon. We have to check the email for that. The Spreadshop will send me that, all of the information. But we got everything in stock, caps, T-shirts, hoodies. Get yourself a T-shirt and a cap right now because it's getting warm out. Spring is finally sprung. So get everything right now at iceguys.myspreadshop.com.
All right, back to wrap. Bargain bin special tonight and best bets to wrap up the show in just a moment right after we hear from our great sponsors, Boston Hemp. Boston Hemp Inc., make sure you check them out. And again, get 20% off all orders on the website using the promo code ICEGUYS at bostonhempinc.com. All right, bargain bin special of the night. Alex, what do you like?
Yeah, so we're going to that Vegas-Edmonton game. I like Vegas to get the job done as far as victory is concerned, but I do think we see some Edmonton players kind of step up, especially in the absence potentially of number 97, Connor McDavid. One of those guys being veteran Corey Perry. You can get him to score anytime goal, plus 410 over at FanDuel. He's a guy who always finds himself right in the front of the net, plays that same kind of role that Zach Hyman does, you know, on that second and third line. But we may see him shift around a little bit with no McDavid there. So look for Corey Perry to get one, plus 410 at FanDuel. It's my bargain bin special tonight.
There we go. I like it. Definitely. Corey Perry there for Scorey Perry, hopefully, tonight. For the Edmonton Oilers against the Vegas Golden Knights for Alex B. Smith with his bargain bin special of the night. For my bargain bin special tonight, I'm going to keep it to Connor Garland, Vancouver Canucks, and we're going to take over 1.5 points at plus 375 for Connor Garland tonight of the Vancouver Canucks against his old team. The price is good. The goal prop, I don't believe, is good enough for the bargain bin as far as the price point. I'm seeing only, you know, plus 210. So we're going to go with the over 1.5 points, plus 375 for Connor Garland tonight for my bargain bin special of the night. All right, best bets. Alex, what do you like for best bet?
Yeah, we'll go with the Blackhawks and Blues. We'll go first period over 1.5, minus 115. This is, definitely feels like it could be one of those games where we see some goals early and often in the contest, end of the season, division rivals, rolling the puck out there and seeing who gets the job done, and looking for a couple goals in the first 20 minutes. Chicago, St. Louis, first period over 1.5, minus 115. That's my best bet for Wednesday.
All right. Chicago, St. Louis, over 1.5, first period, best bet for Alex B. Smith. Brendan, you can pass if you want, but we'll still throw it to you. If you got a best pick, have at it.
Oh, man. I don't know. I think I'm passing on this one.
Nothing wrong with that.
I will say I think you guys were right with the early one over, what was it, 5.5? I think maybe that one's going to be a high-scoring game in the Chicago game. So maybe that one.
There you go. And that's a great segue, Brendan, because that's my best bet. Chicago, St. Louis, over 5.5. I like it. Two teams out of the playoffs. I don't see a lot of defense or shot blocking. I think we see goals tonight with the Blackhawks and the Blues. And a total that's 5.5 makes, I think, it even better. So 5.5, Chicago, St. Louis, over 5.5, minus 115 for my best bet. See if we can cash another over 5.5 as a best bet, just like last night with the Rangers and the Islanders. Hopefully not as stressful, though, tonight. With this one. Great stuff. Brendan, I can't say it enough. Great job.
Yeah.
Your YouTube channel, it's going to be a hit. I love what you're doing with it.
Yes.
And we're going to try to direct people to it and get people to tune
appreciate
in.
That.
But I definitely think that it's going to be cool. You telling these stories of your experiences as a player, and your storytelling is great. You got the charisma. I mean, you've got all the pieces in place to for that YouTube venture of yours to be a success, my friend. So we wish you all the absolute best, and in the Calder Cup playoffs as well with those Charlotte Checkers.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much just for having me and let me use your platform to kind of share some of this stuff. So thanks again. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we can do this again.
Definitely we will.
Yes.
Down the road. That's 100% we will. No doubt. Shout out to everyone in the chat. Apologies for the YouTube issues.
Yeah.
But we thank you for hanging in there. Great show today. Make sure you download the podcast in audio form whenever you can't watch the show live on all the platforms. For Alex B. Smith and our special guest, Brendan Perlini, I'm Ian Cameron. Have a great Wednesday night. Enjoy the games and good luck. And we'll be back tomorrow on Thursday for another edition of the Ice Guys.